213 BCE, Imperial China. Night fires flicker across the capital as Emperor Qin Shi Huang orders forbidden books burned and dissidents silenced. Edicts are swift, punishments harsh. The empire moves in lockstep. Roads built, armies disciplined, taxes collected. Fear works. But when the first emperor dies in 210 BCE, the fear holding everything together begins to crack. Within 4 years, rebellion sweeps the land and his dynasty collapses. Dominance, power through coercion, brought unity fast, then sowed the seeds of its own undoing.
You are listening to The Mammoth in the Room, a podcast dedicated to sharing science-backed leadership strategies for real-world success.
Hello and welcome back to The Mammoth in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences, and today we continue our hierarchy mini-series with episode 4, Dominance, Power Through Coercion. And one quick reminder before we dive in, this fall, Mammoth Leadership Sciences is launching its online leadership academy. The first thing this academy will do is launch a course designed to help leaders like you to decode the psychological and biological and evolutionary traps that hold organizations back and what to do about it. Stay tuned. All right. What do we mean by dominance in leadership? Well, dominance is a route to leadership based on threat, intimidation, and punishment. Influence is extracted, not granted. It's distinct from prestige, where status is given freely in return for valued skills, for knowledge or services, like Henrik and Jill White wrote in 2001. And again, we have a lot of publications in the show notes. In short, dominance compels, prestige attracts. Where it comes from? Well, the roots are deep. Among many social animals, our primate cousins included, rank is enforced by force. Alpha threaten, others submit. Now, early human bands were different. Small, fiercely egalitarian, with fluid, task-based influence and strong leveling norms to check bullies. Yet as societies scaled and faced intergroup conflict, dominance re-entered the picture. When survival hinged on fast, unified action, groups often accepted tougher, centralized power. Evolutionary models argue that sustained warfare favored larger, more hierarchical societies. Those that could mobilize quickly under commanders outcompeted loser rivals. In that crucible, the dominance toolkit, coercion, discipline, deterrence, conferred an edge. Why dominance can work? At least at first? Well, when rapid coordination under threat is needed, when the arrows are incoming, debate is costly. A feared leader can impose order, punish free riding, and deliver unity on a deadline. And it also can work because it gives clear authority. Chains of command remove ambiguity. Strict sanctions deter defection, so large groups act like one body. And the history is full of examples, from Near Eastern warlords to steppe conquerors. Harsh discipline forged armies capable of astonishing feats of coordination. Forced marches, synchronized maneuvers, siege logistics, because disobedience carried immediate consequences. Or think about the Qin Dynasty's unification itself. Standardizing weights, script, and roads shows the speed coercive power can achieve. The bill comes due, though, at some point when that's the only way how someone leads. Because fear is a fragile glue. The same mechanism that forces alignment also corrodes the foundations of durable cooperation. Silence and distortion. Under coercion, people hide errors and mute dissent. Information quality degrades. Leaders steer by flattery and omissions. Low trust and low commitment. Compliance replaces commitment. People do the minimum to avoid punishment, not the maximum to advance the mission. And you also face stifled learning, creativity, and adaptive problem solving shrink when the cost of failure is pain. Hierarchies get rigid just when adaptability is needed. And then there is a succession risk. Dominance personalizes power. And when the strongman weakens or dies,
pent-up resentment and power vacuums erupt as with Chin's swift collapse. That arc, swift gains, brittle equilibrium, and a turbulent end appears across eras. Dominance can seize power and even save a group in crisis, but it rarely sustains legitimacy. Followers comply out of fear, not identification. The moment external pressures eases or another coalition forms, dominance faces revolt from below or betrayal from within. Now, what it feels like to follow dominance? Evolutionary psychology helps explain the human side. Dominant leaders elicit deference through aversion. We keep our heads down, imitate surface behaviors, and avoid risk. Negative effect fear, resentment sticks. Prestige leaders, by contrast, invite voluntary deference. We copy to learn, speak up to contribute, and internalize goals. Both routes can coordinate groups, but they run on different emotional fuel. Dominance burns hot and burns out. So here's a tale of two unifications. Consider the early unifications of China. Qin Shi Huang's dominance, book burnings, collective punishments, monumental forced labor, achieved rapid standardization, but collapsed within years of his death. The succeeding Han consolidated power, more durable, by mixing firmness with legitimacy building, Confucian administration, incentives for local elites, institutional learning. Another fairy tale, Han used force, but the blend shifted followers from mere compliance toward identification with the state's project. Look, the lesson isn't never be firm. I have a subchapter in my book which is titled Hit Hard and Early in Certain Situations. The lesson is, however, coercion without earned authority buys speed, but at the expense of staying power when that's the only way to lead. Now the question is, if dominance carries such costs, why does it endure? Well, there are three reasons that keep tempting leaders back to it. One, crisis optics. In emergency, bold coercion looks decisive. The follow-on damage is delayed. Two, status cues. Across species, assertiveness and threat display read as leaderly, so dominance is misread as competence. And then three, coordination shortcut. It's simpler to force than to persuade until you need creativity, candor, and commitment. Dominance is thus best understood as an evolutionary fallback, effective for shock and awe, risky for stewardship. Now, if there's one thing I want you to take away from today's show, it's this. Dominance can win obedience fast, but only earned respect sustains cooperation. And next week, in episode 5 of our mini-series, we talk about prestige, power through influence. We'll flip the coin and explore how leaders gain durable authority by offering value others choose to follow, how prestige mobilizes imitation, trust, and innovation, and when it outperforms force. All right, this was it for today. If this episode resonated, please subscribe, rate, and share with anyone interested in leadership. And don't forget, Mammoth Leadership Sciences is launching a new online leadership academy this fall. It's packed with insight, tools, and frameworks to help you become a more self-aware, adaptive leader. Keep an eye out. And lastly, if you're interested in more, you can order my book. It has the same title as this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It offers a practical roadmap for how great leaders and their teams embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding business results. And it does it in 3 sections, on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.